Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper, and I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com. A group of people who understand that this nation was founded on the principle that every citizen mattered and that we choose how we are governed. We are the nation. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is I don't need to know that. I can't tell you how many times I have heard students in my in-school suspension room tell me this. I don't need to know that, Mrs. Rowland, because it's not going to be on the test. Well, this remark, this statement, is going to become the norm very soon if Common Core is implemented across this nation as the current administration and its flunkies desire. Common Core purports to be a set of standards that will raise American students to a level where they can compete with those from other developed countries. We have fallen, sadly, in that list over the last 20 years. And Common Core says that it is going to regain our status as having one of the best education systems in the world. Unfortunately, this is not true. What Common Core will do, ladies and gentlemen, with its reliance on standardized testing over and over and over again, and data, and tracking, and steering and guiding our kids into their proper niche in society, is create a climate in which the only thing that matters is passing a specific test. The only thing that matters is measuring up to government's decision about what you're supposed to know at any given moment in your life. Don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. I am not against testing. It's absolutely necessary. We have to have testing. The purpose of testing in school is to measure the amount of knowledge a child has acquired during a given period of time, so that we can tell whether or not that knowledge, having been absorbed, prepares the student for the next step on the learning curve. We need to test. We have to know whether or not the kids we teach and our children, whom we send to school in hope for their future, really are learning the things they will need to know to compete in a global society. I don't mean the Progressive Board Collective when I say global society. I mean nations that trade and interact and have different needs and try to compromise and work out ways that each and every one of them can grow and hopefully have the kind of freedom that we have. Tests are absolutely necessary, no doubt about it. But they are not the reason our children are in school. Common Core is teaching our children, or will be teaching our children, that what matters in life is I have to pass this test, because once I spill out the right answers, I will have a secure position in whatever it is where I belong in the collective. The I don't need to know that because it's not on the test mantra has already become a part of public education. I had a student this week in my ISS classroom who can't stand math because he finds it difficult and he doesn't like it. So his method of dealing with this, instead of being encouraged by his teachers to work a little harder because they know it's hard for him and that this is something he has to know because math comes into our lives every time we walk into a grocery store. His method that he's been allowed to get by with for 5 years is to just refuse to do it. I spent approximately an hour and a half attempting to teach this child how to solve an inequality using the processes of solving equations. And I was explaining it to him based on the idea of a seesaw, that a mathematical equation is like a balanced seesaw. If you've got a 50-pound kid on one end and a 50-pound kid on the other end, the seesaw balances. And in an equation, you can move kids or numbers from one side of an equation to another and still keep it balanced, so long as you do exactly the same thing on both sides of the equal sign. And when you're working with inequalities, the rules are the same, with only one exception, which I won't go into since I'm pretty sure most of you have passed sixth grade math, and I doubt very much whether you're aching to know how to solve an inequality anymore. But anyway, I had gotten him to start at least trying to do it on his own. And then he was pulled away to make up a missing test in the guidance office, and I couldn't get him back to the math for approximately an hour. Lunch intervened. And when I did have him go back to work, he went right back to writing any old number he could think of and not even trying to work out the problem. And all through the time that I was trying to get him to understand it, all I heard from him between tears was, "This is stupid. This is useless. I don't need to know this." Somebody will assist him in passing his math evaluations, and they will promote him and keep promoting him, basically to get him out of the classroom that he's currently in and make him somebody else's problem. And this kid, if he's fortunate enough to have talents or skills that will get him hired in a business, will be at the mercy of whoever it is who tells him, "Oh, I can do the math for you. Don't just relax. I know it's too hard, so you don't have to bother." And probably rob him blind. I had another one today who, having been taught to pass tests, spends his time when he's reading something looking for a keyword in the text that matches a keyword in a question and copying the phrase or sentence around the keyword as an answer. He has absolutely no idea what the text actually says. He has no understanding that it relates to anything real, and is incredibly indignant when I have to take him back and show him what it says in the text and what the question is actually asking him. And today he asked me, Mrs. Rowland, how come you always explain why something is done a certain way? It took me about 3 seconds to recover from having my jaw dropped to my ankles before I could say to him, well, I was taught that if you understand why you are doing something, even if it's hard, you'll see a reason to learn it and maybe work a little harder to understand. The path and the, I guess you could say, the ground has been tilled for Common Core, ladies and gentlemen. My friend Linda asked me, is there a way to illustrate why he really will need this someday? And yes, there is, and I used it. I used the example of, in my county, if you're going to build a garden shed, it has to be below a certain square footage for you to build it yourself without a building permit and a professional designer and all the inspections that the county requires. So you could construct an inequality that says the length times the width of your garden shed has to be less than, 200 square feet. And if you know it has to be 12 feet long in order to accommodate, your lawn tractor and its little cart, then you can figure out how wide you can make it in order to make the garden shed yourself without having to go through the bureaucratic licensing and all the other stuff, so you have a place to put your lawn tractor. It was beginning to seep through. But, like I said, he was pulled away to the guidance office to have a benchmark test read out loud to him so he could pass it. My friend Bill says, unless he plans on being a congressman, he will need his math skills. And you're quite correct, Bill. Congressmen apparently never managed to pass sixth grade math. That's how come they're congressmen. At least it seems that way. I could say that the Senate Majority Leader didn't pass first grade math, but that would be a pejorative, nasty comment, and I'm trying to be a lady and sweet and kind and lovable tonight. I don't think I can sustain it for longer than about 30 seconds when I think about the Senate Majority Leader, but I am going to give it my best shot. Anyway, back to I don't need to know that. As I said at the beginning of the show, I have heard this comment from students at least once a day in every class I have substitute taught or every session with students in the in-school suspension classroom when they're going over their classwork assignments from their teachers. Our founding fathers understood that if we were to have a functioning representative democracy, a republic, we needed educated citizens who could think and reason and choose their leaders based on rational understanding of what that leader intended to do before they walked into a voting booth and poked a button or checked a box or did whatever else they had to do to elect that person to office. My friend Linda says I have to have an abundance of duct tape to keep my head from exploding, and she's quite correct. My metaphorical duct tape is on my person at all times. I teach, ladies and gentlemen, because I think I was programmed to by my creator. I can't help it. It's not something that I actually chose to do consciously and with malice aforethought. It's something that no matter what job I've had, no matter what industry I've worked in, I wind up teaching people things. I enjoy that. It pleases me and gratifies me that I have gained knowledge and experience that I share with others that may make their lives better at some future date. And I'm quite comfortable with the fact that I may never know what effect, positive or negative, that I've had on a child. Obviously, I try to make it a positive effect because it's important to me to, quote-unquote, pay it forward. But it can be very frustrating when you repeatedly hear, oh, well, is that on the test? Well, if it isn't, I don't need to know it. We need lifelong learners as citizens of this great nation, ladies and gentlemen. We need people who understand that the future is not fixed and that new things come about on a daily basis, and that if we are going to be able to succeed socially, economically, and personally, we cannot stop learning. And we cannot ever say to ourselves or anyone else, I don't need to know that. Because that is the pathway to bowing meekly beneath totalitarianism. If you teach a child that there are things he doesn't have to know in your classroom, then you are preparing what should be fertile ground to become a wasteland. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is what Common Core, with its reliance on teach to the test, is going to create in this great nation. We are on the horns of a dilemma in many ways, ladies and gentlemen, over our public school system. Progressive educators and pundits would like us to believe that it is possible to tailor the academic presentation of needed skills and concepts to children so that each child will learn at his own pace and within the limits of his or her abilities, skills, difficulties, and problems, and still meet an objective standard of a body of knowledge that must be absorbed within a specific chronological period. We refuse to fail a student who has not attained mastery of sixth grade skills because it will make him feel bad and he will be permanently scarred for having failed sixth grade and having to repeat it. No one ever mentions the long-term effect of being passed on over and over and over again, higher and higher, to the point where you get a piece of paper that says you have a high school education and you cannot add 7 plus 6 and come up with 13 in your head to save your own life. Today, this morning, I was watching Fox News before I went to work. And there was a discussion over the new elimination of genetic illnesses by using gene splicing from three parents in order to eliminate inherited illnesses. And the doctor who was opposed to this, because to him it was, in effect, playing God and a short step along the road to designing your child to be exactly what you wanted. And the proponent of this, who believed that if we could save one child from inheriting Tay-Sachs syndrome, for example, it was worth it no matter what the consequences, and if there were negative consequences, we'd worry about that later, when and if they showed up. The proponent of this new method of, you know, redesigning humanity, just this morning, basically stated the progressive view of legislation in every area and not just education. Oh, well, yeah, there might be some things wrong with it, but we got to do it anyway because we can save one child. It is this short-sightedness, ladies and gentlemen, that is at the basis of Common Core. It's at the basis of why our public education system is failing. It is the inability of progressive educators and educational pundits to see beyond their own pride, their own ego, and their own desire to be God. Education, ladies and gentlemen, requires effort on the part of the teacher and the student. If you are going to be a lifelong learner, which is exactly what it takes to survive in today's ever-increasing technological world, you cannot, for a moment, say to yourself, I don't need to know that. You have to be willing and able to learn new things, because otherwise you will never be able to keep up. Granted, not everyone learns at the same pace. Granted, those whose pace is slower than average are going to have difficulty keeping up. Granted, everybody should be educated to the highest level of which they are capable. But this is not what Common Core is based upon. Those of us who have worked in education understand that no matter how hard we try, we cannot put knowledge into the head of a person who doesn't wish to absorb it, or cannot, is mentally and physically incapable of learning it. All the legislation and punitive fitness reports and eliminating tenure and demanding teacher competency tests are not going to make every child alike in the way he or she learns and in what he or she is interested in. Some of you, I'm sure, out there may be familiar with the Montessori method of teaching. Maria Montessori was an educational philosopher who believed that children should learn at their own individual developmental pace. That very young children were not ever ready for reading and writing, and the basics needed to learn how to do that at the age of 4 or 5. They needed to learn, they needed to master small motor coordination. They needed large things, big wall boards and big fat crayons to make very large letters, because their small motor coordination, their physical and mental compatibilities had not yet developed to the point that they could write on a standard piece of paper with a standard pencil. Well, Maria Montessori was not wrong. She was correct in many ways. But her ideas have been expanded upon with the help of progressives in government to mean that every child has to be taught in the way that is comfortable and fun for them, because otherwise they aren't going to learn anything. I'm sorry to sound like a wicked old witch of a school teacher. Now, I can't help it. I am a wicked old witch of a school teacher. But sometimes children don't want to learn something because it requires them to stretch their mental muscles and they would rather play. This is part of being a child. And our desire as adults to protect our children and allow them to be children as long as possible and not force them to assume adult responsibility has been perverted to mean that they have to be playing for 12 straight years in order for them to develop into a full, complete, happy human being. This is ridiculous. You can make learning enjoyable, but you cannot make it less than work. It is work. Anything worth having is worth working for. And education, learning, knowledge are incredibly valuable. But our children are not being taught this. They're not being taught that it is the knowledge that is of value, not the grade. They are being taught to basically lie, cheat, and steal in order to make a grade. Many years ago, I had a pen pal who lived in this, what was then the Soviet Union. She was a teacher, a high school teacher, and she hated it because it was all a matter of watching the creative cheating that went on to get the grades that would put somebody in the right spot to enter the Politburo and have a sinecure of a job and a villa on the Caspian Sea. She couldn't teach because her students couldn't learn. They had been told over and over and over again that it was not knowledge that was valuable. It was success on a test that got you one step closer to luxury and power. And it is this perverted idea, ladies and gentlemen, that is at the root of Common Core. When you rely on testing to measure the worth of a child, and you demand of teachers that they do the impossible and vilify, denigrate, and punish them when they can't do it, what kind of a body politic are you creating? The I don't need to know that nation. It's not on the test, so I don't need to think about what Shakespeare was talking about in Hamlet's soliloquy. All I have to be able to do is recognize that if it starts out to be or not to be, Shakespeare wrote it and it was probably in Hamlet. But think about what the words mean. Oh no, I don't have to know that. All I have to do is to figure out a trick to narrow down the multiple choice answers on the standardized test so I've got a 50-50 shot of getting it right. Then they are not educated. My friend Rod says if they can't remember what they learned, they didn't learn. And that's quite true. And I'll tell you, Rod, the number of kids that I see in my ISS room, okay, who tell me, oh yeah, we learned that last year, but I forgot. Well then, doggone it, you didn't learn it. I had a seventh grader today who didn't recognize the symbol for pi. And he was supposedly taught how to find the area of a circle in sixth grade. So I taught him what it was. And he said, oh yeah, I kind of remember learning something about that. No, he didn't learn anything about it. He just remembers hearing somebody say something like that, and it went right over his head, and it had absolutely no relationship to anything. My dear brother-in-law asked my husband once, in reference to me, does she always talk in parables? And my husband said, yeah, she does. I teach that way too. Knowledge doesn't relate to children unless you can put it in context for them in a way with which they are familiar. My illustration of the inequality as a way of figuring out how big your garden shed can be without having to have a building permit made the concept of an inequality real. And if I'd had more time with the kid, I think I could have actually taught him how to do it correctly, and that would have raised his happy little self-esteem asymptotically. Another student that I had today was working on volume. Volume of rectangular prisms, volume of cylinders. And that's what his class was doing, so that was the classwork that I assigned him, and I went over it with him. And he was understanding what to do. And I took him into how to figure out what the letters in the formula for surface area meant and how to put them in line so he could then use his calculator to figure the surface area of a cylinder. And I told him, I congratulated him and explained to him, you're ahead of the class. And you would have thought that I had given him an Olympic gold medal. Great big grin, sparkling eyes. He learned something. He knew more than the rest of the kids in his class. Because, God bless him, he was willing to accept the knowledge I had to teach. Not because it was going to be on the test, but because it gave him something he hadn't had before. And that made my day. One of my students walked out of my classroom knowing something he hadn't known when he walked in. And it is that passion that makes one a teacher. And when you take away the possibility of moments like that by demanding that teachers teach to the Common Core data-driven test measurements, what will the result be? You won't have teachers anymore. You'll have facilitators. I was talking to a fellow teacher this morning about teachers have to be, at least partially, thespians, because we have to be center stage in a classroom. We have to be able to engage the attention in middle school of 13-year-olds. Have you ever tried to engage the attention of a 13-year-old for longer than 25 seconds in between playing a game on his Wii? If you have, then you ought to have a great deal of sympathy for middle school teachers. My friend Linda says that we were so lucky to grow up in the era that we did. We had a passion for learning as well as for helping other people. And yes, it's true, we did. We were the children of the greatest generation. We were given a tremendous gift. And it's our responsibility to try to pay that gift forward. That's the reason you kind folks listen to me every week on Thursday nights. And it's the reason that all of my friends, my surrogate family at patriotfamilies.com, do what we do. My friend Rod says we had teachers who knew how to keep us interested in learning. And yes, like my friend Linda says, they were allowed to. They could figure out projects and plans that would take the extra time necessary to go over a difficult concept. One of the most difficult concepts that teachers in middle school have to get across to adolescents is the difference between arithmetic and mathematics. Arithmetic is about getting an answer using the four basic operations of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. Mathematics is the owner's manual for numbers. Mathematics is understanding why and how numbers do what they do and how to make them do what you need them to get some information you need to use. Making that intellectual leap from adding six numbers and coming up with the right answer to understanding how an equation works and why you can solve 3x plus 4 equals 22 by first subtracting 4 from both sides and then dividing by 3 is a tremendous task for these kids. And my friend Linda hit it on the head. Without math, you have very little science, no space travel, and no music. Music is mathematics. Science is mathematics. Everyday living is mathematics. If you get a paycheck, it's mathematics. If you buy something in a store, it's mathematics. If you tell the time on a 24-hour clock, it's mathematics. It's understanding the relationships of numbers. Making that leap from arithmetic to mathematics is one of the hardest things for children to do during middle school years. And yet they have to make the leap, because once they complete eighth grade and go on to high school, it's not going to be arithmetic for the rest of their lives. It's going to be mathematics. My friend Rod says, just as I told my students, without math, you're going to be subject to being taken advantage of, especially from banks, stores, and any place you spend money. And that is exactly the point. Look at the number of young men who have gone into professional sports because they had a tremendous talent and who were nursed through college in order to make it into the pros by taking elementary basket weaving and somebody else takes their algebra test. And the poor souls wind up getting hurt the first year, and they are broke because they've had to trust business managers and family members and good friends to manage their money because they cannot understand how to do it. Eleven, twelve, and 13-year-olds, ladies and gentlemen, have no ability to see beyond today. To an adolescent in middle school, the future will be exactly like what they're doing now, except that they'll be grown up and have lots of neat stuff to play with and have can stay up as late as they want and have sex with the opposite sex or the same sex, whichever they're interested in. But that's the only difference they can comprehend. I have gone over and over and over with my students that I don't need to know that is the worst possible thing they can say to me. And it's about the only thing, aside from profanity, that will get my dander up and let my Swedish-Irish temper loose. Because there is no way at age 13 that you have a clue what you're going to have to know when you're 40, especially in a society and a world in which technology is burgeoning so rapidly. I cannot put my 67-year-old life-experienced mind into the head of a 13-year-old eighth grader. I wouldn't if I could. That's a horrible thing to do to a happy kid. So I have to find some other way to get them the knowledge that they are going to need down the road. That's why I always talk in parables. I have to relate what they're learning now to something they can see now, because their ability to understand all of the changes they will face does not exist at age 13. Not only can they not envision a future because they have not had enough life yet upon which to base their choices. 90% of the time, they're all thinking below the waist anyway. most of their attention is focused on, let's have a good time, and does that girl like me or does that guy like me? So trying to pull their attention to something as boring as 3x plus 2 equals 17 is sort of like building the Transcontinental Railroad all by yourself. But we do it anyway. And now Common Core is going to come along and tell these kids that we've been trying to teach to be lifelong learners that they don't need to know that. Because when you teach children to use that and to believe that, then you can tell them anything and tell them, well, you don't need to know any more than this, because this is the one that's going to be on your test. You don't need to know the possible long-term consequences of gene splicing with three parents and an embryo. We'll deal with it when it comes. We just need to save this child so he won't have Tay-Sachs syndrome. We want you to feel good right now. And the fact that what we're doing for you to make you feel good is going to kill you 10 years from now, well, we'll worry about that 10 years from now. So you don't need to worry about that. You just need to worry about feeling good right now. It's hard enough, ladies and gentlemen, for adults who actually have an education to summon the courage to go against the flow of the instant gratification society. Yay, Rod! Rod added 8 plus 8 plus 1 and got 17. Yay! Guess what, Rod? You're ready for college. And I'll bet you didn't even use a calculator. You're ready for a PhD in mathematics. By comparison, the number of kids who whip out a calculator when I ask them what 2 plus 3 is would astonish and sicken you. If our kids are being told that all they need to know is what government says they're going to get tested on, I shudder for the future of my country. And Franklin and Jefferson and Adams and Wythe and all the rest of those guys are spinning so crazily in their graves, it's a wonder we haven't got an earthquake right here in my part of Virginia. Maybe that's why we had the earthquake in Louisa County a couple of years ago. It's all our founding fathers rolling over like dervishes beneath the ground. At what Virginia, the mother of presidents, is being forced to do to their descendants. My friend Rod says math was his best subject and he worked problems in his head. Well, it wasn't my best subject. I hated it. I found it incredibly boring. I've always liked words way more than I've liked numbers. I can do it, but as I've said before, parable number 327, per Mrs. Rowland, knowing how to do math is a lot like cleaning toilets for me. It isn't a pleasure. I don't enjoy it. I certainly don't do it for fun, but I definitely want to be able to avoid stinky problems down the road. And yes, I use that parable with my kids, because I have to get across to them that sometimes you have to do things you don't like. And sometimes you have to learn things that are hard for you. And if you can make yourself do that, you won't be knocked down and unable to get up when life throws you an unexpected curveball. As a corollary to that, we had a code red drill today at school. Code red drills, or code red, is edu-speak for intruder in the building. And the students all are supposed to get on the floor in a corner where they can't be seen, the lights are turned off, the door is locked, etc., etc., you know, the whole thing. And once the drill was over, one of my students, the one who is really good at hunting keywords and putting down the wrong answer because he has no clue what the text says, said, well, what if somebody came in here? What if? And I said, I explained to him, look, you can't be prepared for the unexpected, because if it's unexpected, you have no idea it's going to happen. All we can do is try to think of ways to get you to understand what you should automatically do if something is like this happens. And from that point, you have to go along with what happens and try to do the best you can to stay alive. Going through 14,000 what-ifs is not going to change what you're going to have to do during a drill. Because what we're trying to teach you is just like what I was trying to teach you a few minutes ago about how to find the volume of a rectangular prism. If you follow the steps, then you've got solid ground and you can go from there. My friend Bill says calculators weren't invented when he was in school, and they weren't invented when I was in school either. If they'd been around when my David was in school, he'd have been an engineer, because arithmetic was his downfall, not mathematics. And this is another good illustration of the difference. My David had no problem with math concepts at all. They were clear to him. The fact that he could visualize and build a greenhouse in my backyard without having to draw a plan, okay, he understood mathematics. Arithmetic, there was no way he could do it because of his dyslexia. He inevitably flipped the numbers. But had calculators been around, that arithmetical deficiency would not have held him back, and he would have been, very likely, an engineer. He thought like one. My dad was an engineer. And he was a very good mathematician. And it used to bug him to death that I didn't like math. He had, I think, hopes that at least one of his three daughters would go into engineering, and all three of us disappointed him, unfortunately, for him, but fortunately for us, because none of us had the temperament to make an engineer. The only one who came close is my youngest sister, and we used to call her Switzerland because she was always neutral in family discussions. But a talent for math, okay, is a gift, like a talent for music or a talent for football or a talent for dance. Not everybody is born with a talent for math, but everybody is born with, hopefully, sufficient brain function to learn survival math. My friend Bill says he tells his kids he has a PC and he keeps it between his ears. Good for you, Bill, because that's where I keep mine. Unfortunately, it doesn't hook up to Skype without the use of an external hard drive, but, you know, it works fairly well. Our kids, ladies and gentlemen, have to know a certain amount of basic education. They need to be able to communicate orally and in writing in the language of the nation. They need to be familiar with the history of the country and understand the structure of our government and their part in choosing those who make up our government. They have to be able to understand what used to be eighth grade math, which is the four operations with fractions, decimals, and percents, basic geometry, being able to find out, figure area, perimeter, volume, surface area, the understanding interest, the understanding of what an equation is and how it works, and they can get along, and they'll have the platform from which they can go farther should it be necessary for them to learn more to achieve what they want to achieve in whatever profession they choose. They have to have a basic knowledge of science. They need to understand life sciences, cell structure, genetics, heredity. They need to understand basic chemistry. They need to understand the scientific method and why it works and how it works and how to apply it to experiments in their own lives. They need the scientific method and the mathematical formula understanding to do something as simple as bake a cake from scratch. They need to understand those four core areas, the social studies area, history and geography, so they can find Florida on a map when they're trying to drive to a, you know, stock car race or something, so they can not mix ammonia and Clorox and gas themselves to death, so they can figure out how to keep a checkbook and read their bank statement and understand all those minus numbers on their paycheck. Enough civics to know exactly what Congress is supposed to do and what the president isn't supposed to do and who runs what and how to choose the right ones. They have to be able to write a coherent sentence. They have to be able to read in order to understand a manual for a piece of technology or an instruction list for putting together an entertainment center or a magazine for finding out more about a subject they're interested in. They need to be exposed to literature, to poetry, novels, short stories, because those things speak to the human condition. They talk about the essence of being a human. My grandmother had an eighth grade education. That was my mother's mother, who was left a widow with two daughters, one 15 and one 10, and had to go out and work two jobs in order to see both of them through 12 years of Catholic school. And she did it, because she was a lifelong learner. She was given the platform from which to learn more. She wasn't taught that what mattered was passing a test. She was taught that she was supposed to remember the stuff that was going to be on the test after the test was over, because she was going to need it for next year's work. How are you going to teach a child algebra if they cannot mentally understand that addition and subtraction are two sides of the same coin? That if you know that 7 plus 8 is 15, then you also know that 15 minus 8 is 7, and 15 minus 7 equals 8. This is the springboard to understanding how do you do equations. But our kids are not being given the platform from which to launch themselves into the world academically. They are being given sugar-coated, feel-good garbage. And really good, dedicated teachers leave the profession almost as fast as a guy who's just robbed a bank goes through a revolving door, because they are being asked to betray their own integrity in order to keep their job. One of the kids that was in my ISS room today, well, two of them, I didn't expect to have. They are acquaintances. Their parents know each other. They are, quote-unquote, playfellows in the sense that they're invited to each other's birthday parties, etc. And one of the two takes longer to learn, but really tries. The other one has been, oh, he can't help it. He has a learning disability throughout school. And he's an obscene little beast who cannot shut up and disturbs everybody else in the classroom. And the current behavior modification plan for that second child, I have heard, is that everybody else in class should be punished for not ignoring him when he acts out. And he should be accommodated because he has a disability. Now, you all know that I am not particularly fond of group anything, and that I do not say that the welfare of the group is of more worth than individual. But in this particular case, the individuality in question is not being trained in a direction that's positive. The individuality in question is being told that it's not necessary to adapt to the conventions of good manners, courtesy, and the golden rule of treating others the way you would be treated, because you have a disability, so you can act like a jerk whenever you feel like it, because it's not your fault. And everybody else has to do their best to try to continue to concentrate when you're madly giggling or mouthing obscenities or pounding on the desk or slamming your head against a wall. The whole system is so backwards, ladies and gentlemen. It rewards mediocrity and punishes exceptionalism. Good night to my friend Rod, and thank you for the blessing, dear. The same to you. I hope you'll join me again next week. I'll be here again, good Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. And it's always great to have you with us, Rod. I continue to do what I do, ladies and gentlemen, not because anybody's going to give me kudos or praise for it, and not because, Lord knows, I'm going to get rich, because I'm not. I do it because I'm driven to. I don't know what my purpose on this earth is. God does, but I'm not God. All I know is that I have to do what I believe is the right thing. And I believe that for me, the right thing is to be a voice of reason and a teacher. And one child at a time, try to inculcate and the value of knowledge and the desire to acquire it. I know that I will not be 100% successful. I don't think there's anybody in this world who's ever been 100% successful at everything he's ever tried to do anyway. Even Da Vinci, the quintessential Renaissance man. And no, I'm not Da Vinci either. But I do have to keep trying. I have to believe that I can make a difference. Not in the feel-good, sloppy, sentimental, progressive, we're all brothers, kumbaya moment that comes out of Washington, but out of my individual choices and individual actions. I tell my students that they cannot control the actions of others, that the only person in their entire life over whom they will have complete control is themselves, and they have to work at it. I do not allow the children in my classroom to correct or give orders to the other children. That is not their job. It is mine. I explain to them that they are responsible for controlling themselves. And if somebody is not behaving properly, I am responsible for letting them know they're not, and indicating what will happen if they do not adjust their behavior appropriately. Occasionally, I run into the, did you see what he did, Mrs. Rowland? Tell him to stop doing that, Mrs. Rowland. Stop doing that. And I have to remove the individual for a short period of time and explain to them that, no, you're not ready to take charge of the class. You concentrate on doing your work and following the rules, and let me deal with the Zornenplatz Hoosie Watset over there, because that is my job. But Common Core doesn't teach that you're responsible for yourself and your choices. Common Core teaches that government is responsible for you. And that there's always somebody else at fault when your choice turns out to have been incorrect. And that if you have some special need, it's somebody else's job to compensate you for it, with no effort on your part. You are right, my friend Linda. Common Core is brainwashing. It is putting the good of the collective before the worth of the individual by making the assumption that if we just pass enough legislation and control enough of what's taught in our schools, we will redesign humanity into the complacent, happy cogs in the progressive machine that the philosopher kings know is best for all of us. And I will repeat what my friend Bill says in the chat room. Happy anniversary to the Tea Party. We are now 5 years old. Golly, we're almost ready for first grade, guys. The values that I espouse and that I try to exemplify to my children are those that our founding fathers saw as what would make a viable constitutional republic. A strong work ethic, a desire to better the lives of others as well as ourselves, personal responsibility for one's own actions and choices. The understanding that if I do something I know is inappropriate, then I have no right to whine and blame somebody else for getting me in trouble. And I've had students who apparently have been taught the same values that I have at home. Not that they were angels, they weren't. Otherwise, if they were angels, they wouldn't be in the in-school suspension room. But bless their hearts, when they did something they knew was against the rules, they owned up to it and said, yeah, I knew I was breaking the rule, and I'll take my punishment. That's how I was brought up, ladies and gentlemen. I was taught that I had a choice in what I did, that I could choose to do the right thing or I could choose to do the wrong one. And it was my choice. And saying, oh, well, so-and-so talked me into it wouldn't get me off the hook if it was a bad choice. Because I was supposed to make my own decisions and not wait for somebody else to tell me what choice to make. And I was taught that from the time I was old enough to articulate, which was probably about a year old. If I was told not to touch the stove because it was hot and it would hurt, and I did it anyway, I didn't get a lot of sympathy in, oh, poor baby. I got, well, I told you, come over here and I'll put some butter on that. Now go off somewhere and wait until it doesn't hurt so much anymore. And I got a hug, and I'm sorry it hurts. But, you know, now you'll know not to do that again. My friend Linda says she heard, if everybody jumps off the cliff, are you going to do it too? So did I, Linda. And I heard it just as many times as you did. It was never a reliable reason for doing anything in my family. Blaming somebody else for your own wrong choice never got you out of trouble. As a matter of fact, it made the trouble worse. Because I had parents who expected me to think about what I did before I did it. They didn't raise me to be led around by a ring through my nose and do whatever anybody else told me to do at any given moment. Now, I was taught that in certain circumstances, when I was under the authority of someone else, I was expected to do what they told me. In a classroom, for example. If the teacher said, take out your spelling book and open to page 37, that meant that I wasn't supposed to pull out the book I was reading and do that instead of spelling. But I was also taught that if my teacher said, take out your spelling book and hit the child next to you with it, I was supposed to say, no, ma'am, I can't do that. That's wrong. Being a parent is a difficult job, ladies and gentlemen, which is one of the reasons why I didn't want it. What I do for a living is bad enough. But I honor the parents out there who teach and love and encourage and nurture and build great men and women. And there are lots of those parents. More than we can count. Because it's not those parents that make the news and that government can't wait to help. It's those parents who have been taught from the beginning of their life that it's somebody else's responsibility to clean up the mess they make, who have six children by six different fathers because it's more ADC money that government can't wait to help. Because it's those parents who figure it's somebody else's job to raise their children and clean up their mess, who are going to vote for those in government who have given them all that nice help so they can continue to have their messes cleaned up by somebody other than themselves. Common Core is one more weapon in the arsenal of progressivism to create dependent victims who cannot breathe without asking government how deep. I'm reading a series of books for children written by an author named Margaret Patterson Haddix. She's very popular among kids. She writes pretty good books, too. This series is called The Shadow Children, and it's a dystopian novel set in a time when there have been worldwide droughts and very little food production and famine and riots and so on. And government steps in and basically says, well, we can fix this. The reason that everybody's starving is because we have way too many people for the amount of food. So from now on, nobody's going to be allowed to have more than two children. And if you have a third child, that child has to be killed. Or if you're pregnant after having two kids, that baby has to be aborted. And if you give birth to that child and you don't kill it or let us do it, then we will kill you and the child. And that way everybody will have enough food. Because that way we'll control the population. Sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen? Well, in the book that I just finished, there is an incident where the rebels, third children and their allies among the population police, have managed to open to the average people a huge storehouse of food that was going to be used to, in effect, bribe the non-wealthy class into supporting more turn in a third child if you know of one so we can kill it, to the general population under the guise of we have to protect this food because the nasty rebels are going to come and steal it all, so we want everybody to go in and take it out of this warehouse because the warehouse is going to be destroyed and all the food's going to be destroyed, and take it home with you and then bring it back as soon as we're sure the danger's over. And it was set up by the rebels to try to get food to the people who literally were starving. And then they did. And then when the population police said, the danger's over, bring it back, they brought the food back. Because they had become so brainwashed, so terrified, that they would allow their children to starve rather than disobey an order from the totalitarian government in charge. My friend Linda says China and North Korea are doing that right now, and yes, they are. If you look at a lot of the Agenda 21 ideas, the natural progression of many of them is exactly what I just described to you from this dystopian novel for 4th, 5th, and 6th graders. It's the myth of the zero-sum pie, ladies and gentlemen. The idea that there's only so much of anything. So we can't let anybody have more than anybody else because that's greedy and unnatural. It is a myth. It is a lie. It is stupid. It's dumb. But people believe it because they're being dumbed down in the public schools that their tax monies pay for. And Linda references Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I rail against Common Core, ladies and gentlemen, not because I don't believe in standards or in expectations. I do. I have very high standards and great expectations. I rail against Common Core because it's not about standards and expectations. It's about standardizing human beings. You can standardize weights and measures, ladies and gentlemen. You can standardize ingredients in a recipe so that all the cakes come out the same. But you cannot standardize human spirit, human individuality, human exceptionalism. Because when you try, you destroy what it means to be human. You create a nation of people who say, I don't need to know that, and blindly walk to the slaughter, lower their heads so the slave collar can be attached, hold out their hands for the manacles, and meekly smile and say thank you when they are chained to the cog in the machine where government has decided they belong. I have been incredibly lucky, ladies and gentlemen, to have been born at the time I was born, to have been educated during the time that I was educated, to have lived in a world in which the value of the individual was recognized and praised, to have been taught by my parents that I could be or do anything that my skills, abilities, and desire to work toward it could envision. My friend Linda says, absolutely, and therefore I can think critically. And that's quite true. I can and do. And think for myself. Imagine that, Linda says. Yeah, and that's it. But tyrants have always done everything they can to suppress individuality, ladies and gentlemen, because individuality is dangerous to tyranny. The man who does not keep pace with his companions, who marches to a different drummer, is usually the man or woman who creates something that makes life better for every man and woman, simply because he does not march to the same drummer. I have said over and over again on this program, ladies and gentlemen, that the best way to keep control over a population is to keep them ignorant and afraid. And that is what our current educational philosophers, who are hand in glove with progressives, are doing their best to achieve. Nobody ever told me, you don't need to know that, it's not on the test. Not once, ladies and gentlemen, in all of my years of schooling, through my master's degree, did anybody ever tell me that. And yet I have heard it in classrooms, and not just from the students. I won't say it. I refuse. Linda says she thinks her dad would have had a stroke if she'd said that. Mine would too. But before he passed away, he would have smacked me either verbally or physically and told me I was full of the stuff that comes out of the back end of a horse and to never say it to him again. Because my father and my mother and my grandmother and my aunts and my uncles and my sisters and I all understood that you have no clue what might come up that you need to know 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road. For my kids, my students, I tell them, someday you might be on Jeopardy. And knowing the first name of James Watson, in Watson and Crick, the first modelers of the DNA molecule, might be the, you know, double Jeopardy question that wins you $60,000. Parables again, ladies and gentlemen. Making knowledge valuable because it's relevant to something they know. My friend Bill said when it came to education, his parents were his biggest supporters and cheerleaders. So were mine, Bill. Both of them believed in being a lifelong learner. Even though my mother was not academically inclined, and my father was, she learned every moment of her life. One of her favorite things in the world to do was crossword puzzles because she learned things when she did them. When you grow up with that atmosphere in your home, how can you avoid being a lifelong learner? You can't, because it's the norm. Not once did my parents ever say, you don't need to know that. They did say that you're not ready to learn that yet. You need to be a little older, or that's not something that's your business. That's something that your mother and I or your father and I have to discuss. But it was never, you don't need to know that. That phrase was never, never, ever fed to me. Never. And because it wasn't, it's not part of my lexicon. It's not something I would ever say to anyone else or to myself. I research everything because I don't want to be ignorant. Ignorance is shameful. And it's curable. Stupidity is just sad because it's incurable. But so many people out there who appear stupid aren't. They are merely ignorant because they have never been taught how to learn. They have never had examples before them every day of their lives of people who recognize that it's valuable to learn. And if they don't have it at home, How are they going to get it in schools that tell them you don't need to know that? If the public schools are to be the great levelers that our founding fathers envisioned, what level are they seeking to achieve? Willful ignorance? I doubt very much whether that was the level that the founding fathers had in mind. Teaching to the test Common Core educational programs are among the most dangerous progressive meddlings in our society that I can think of. And most people won't recognize it because, like the man who proposes, oh, gee, it's going to be great if we can stop this one kid from having Tay-Sachs, nobody wants to look at the possible long-term consequences. They want the instant feel-good, oh, looky what I did. Americans are prone to this, ladies and gentlemen, because we are always attracted by the new. It's built into our genetic makeup, because the people who founded this country and swelled its population wouldn't have left where they came from if they weren't fascinated by new or needed new. So our gene pool is constantly refreshed by people who aren't content with, I already know that. They want something more. Unfortunately, that American gene, I guess you could call it, that desire to, well, let's try a new thing, has its downside. Because too often, new to people means better. And new isn't always better. So, we need to start paying attention, ladies and gentlemen. We need to start watching what our kids are learning. We need to listen for the I don't know that and nip it in the bud immediately. Do not let your children or grandchildren or nieces or nephews ever say to you, I don't need to know that, it isn't on the test, and get by with it. Please, I beg you. I beg you, on bended knee, if necessary, do not let your children be pulled down into willful ignorance and teaching to the test. Do anything and everything you can to encourage them to want to know as much as they can possibly stuff in their adorable little curly heads. Because once you get into the habit of learning, it remains your habit throughout your life. And you won't be fodder for tyrants because you will not say to yourself, I don't need to know that. I want to thank everybody who's been with me in the chat room tonight and who's listening in out there over the Ethernet or whatever we want to call it. I'm hoping that those of you who are listening will do what you can, one person at a time, to dig in and fight against the implementation of Common Core in your schools. We cannot allow this to happen. We cannot sit back and say, I don't need to know that, ladies and gentlemen. We can't. And still have the country in which we grew up and which, hopefully, we love. We have to stop the I don't know that agenda. I don't need to know that has got to be eliminated from your children's vocabulary and from their perceptions of the world. And we can do it, ladies and gentlemen. One family, one child at a time. I'm not telling you that all your kids have to grow up to be, Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory, for example. Or the ultimate geek with their nose in a dictionary who never goes outside. No. What I'm telling you is that your children need to grow up to be lifelong learners. So that when something new comes along, they have the ability to look at it, examine it, and question it, and see the long-term consequences, and then make a decision about whether or not to support it, or whether to tweak it into something better, or whether to turn their backs on it and say, not me, buddy. Please, ladies and gentlemen, all of you out there who are listening, please, if you ever hear your child say, I don't need to know that, it's not on the test, stop right there. And explain to them that when you say that, you are telling yourself that it's okay to be ignorant. That it's okay not to want to learn. And it is not okay. We can do this, ladies and gentlemen, because we understand and we know that I don't need to know that is a dangerous and deadly idea to plant in the mind of a child. I have faith in the human spirit, ladies and gentlemen, because we are children of God. And made in God's image, we too are creators. We too want to know. We too need to learn. My friend Bill says we need a t-shirt. Patriot family on one side and I am a life learner on the back. I love that idea, Bill. I love it. And even two different ones. One with, I am a life learner on the back, and if people don't want to be associated with Patriot Family, that's fine. So long as they understand that I want to be a life learner is what they need to show by precept and example to their children. Knowledge separates us, ladies and gentlemen, from all the other mammals. Knowledge and the ability to learn and retain is what has allowed our species to remain top of the food chain, what has kept us alive as a species. Because we can learn and retain what we learn and pass it on to our offspring, puny little human beings have managed to survive as long as we have. And I happen to like human beings in general. Some individuals I don't like very much, but in general, I'd like to see my species survive. And we can if every one of us eliminates from our thoughts and our vocabularies, I don't need to know that. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being here tonight. And I'll see you again next Thursday at 6 for Patriot Education. As always, all my love to my greatest fan. Blessed be everyone. Thanks again for joining us. And remember, you are the nation. You make the difference. You make the choices. Whatever your choice is, make sure that it's yours, chosen by you, and not by anybody else. Good night, folks. Have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you next Thursday here on Blog Talk Radio, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.